This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis and Chesterfield Fence and Deck.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
What an absolute pleasure it is to be with my friend Chris Ranji, the co-host along with Ranji, my name, Tom Ackerman. Great to be with you, buddy.
Hey, pal. How are you?
I'm great. Anytime it's Gas House Gang time, that's a good time, especially when baseball season is underway, and it is.
Tomorrow, officially, spring training starts. I mean, it's happening.
I count it already. Yeah, count it.
But tomorrow's the official day.
Monday, actually, is when they reported for the World Baseball Classic pitchers and catchers. It's underway. It's happening. But I know what you're saying. And then the workouts begin tomorrow for pitchers and catchers. And then the workouts begin for the full squad on the 16th. And you know who's down there following all of it? Matt Pauly.
Now, a St. Louis Cardinals spring training report. Sponsored by St. Louis Composting. Composting, growing gardens and making memories. And by Happy Roof. We always create happy endings on the voice of the Cardinals, KMOX.
Matt, what's going on down there, buddy? I am happy that you're with us. How are you?
I'm happy to be with you guys, and I'm with you, Tom. Spring training's underway. I just came in from outside where there were lots of pitchers throwing bullpen sessions, and that felt like just a normal day. I was in the new hitting tunnel building a little while ago, saw Jordan Walker, Mason Wynn, Nathan Church. There are probably 10 guys in there taking swings in the new tunnel. So baseball things are happening. It feels like spring. It feels like spring training. And it doesn't matter that the calendar says tomorrow might be the first official workout.
No, I appreciate that. Thanks for the backup.
You guys can stop coming to me any minute now.
We love you,
I'm just saying, the Cardinals told me tomorrow's the official day.
Listen,
so you can call them liars if you want.
He's so wound up. Hey, this is a baseball
show. I'm sick of it.
The last 3 hours talking politics, it's done. That's over. We're talking baseball. You also had city kits and all that good stuff.
Hey, are you jealous?
This is a relaxing one-hour baseball show. This is why people love it. It's okay.
Well, they're not come listening to fall asleep.
No, they're not. But you and I can go at it if you want. Baseball is underway. Spring training's underway. They're working out. Okay. Thank you, Matt, for verifying that and watching it down in Jupiter, Florida. Matt, I will say this from a coverage standpoint. I'm very excited. Now, I know that this team is not picked to do anything, and they won't be, and I don't expect them to do a whole lot, quite honestly, in this division. But why am I excited? Because when I go down to spring training, I like to learn. I like to see things that I don't know. And I don't know a lot about whether these players are going to advance, and especially the prospects. There's a lot of unknown and excitement, I think, surrounding them. Would you agree with that?
I would, and I think going hand in hand with that is just the amount of competition that's going to take place in camp. In fact, we sat down with Oliver Marmol about an hour and a half ago, and it just kept coming up with him how excited he is about watching the different areas of competition that are going to take place. And the first one he mentioned was starting pitching, and there are some new names in there. You mentioned the prospects. There are new names in there, like a Hunter Dobbins, like a Richard Fitz, that are going to be battling for jobs. And there's a bunch of young guys that are trying to prove that they are ready for the big leagues. So it is it's fun to see people you've never laid eyes on before, and there's a lot of that because there's a lot of new dudes in this camp, and then it's also fun to start to watch. It's still very early stages of it, but start to watch some of these competitive pieces come together as well.
And that's what this season's going to be about, not just competition and spring training, but the competition part of it is about players trying to prove themselves, trying to take steps forward, and Bernie and I discussed that a lot yesterday, that this upcoming season will be still kind of like last year, a lot about players like Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman and, you know, J.J. Weatherholt is very likely to make the team, seeing what they can do, seeing what sort of steps forward they can take, because the Cardinals are playing for the future here. So in a spring training like this, does it have a different feel to you than maybe it did, say, 5 years ago? And I know you weren't here 5 years ago with the Cardinals, but yeah. You know what I'm talking about. And you've covered teams that go into the season knowing they are a division competitor.
It doesn't feel different right now. Maybe we keep revisiting this as spring goes along, but right now it just feels like a standard spring where everybody's really excited about what the year might bring them. So that's how it's supposed to feel. Guys are supposed to, the line from Heim Bloom all offseason has been that they will not concede anything on the field no matter what kind of roster moves they're making, and I think that attitude right now is permeating the entire organization.
Matt wants to know if I think that the teardown that I thought it was going to be is the same, less, more. It's exactly as I told you it was going to be, Matt. It is a full rebuild. Not you, Matt Pauly, Matt DeMargill. It is a full rebuild. I told you it was going to be. And this is exactly, Matt Pauly, what Heim Bloom wanted to do. It's not what Heim Bloom wanted to do. It's what ownership wanted to do. It might be overdue, but this is exactly what this is. It's a full rebuild. I'm just going to have to remind people, because, Matt, we do have to remember this also, is that Cardinals fans are really good. But there are a lot of Cardinals fans out there that are just starting to come in. They're just getting acquainted. They want to know what's going on. And they're looking at the roster saying, I don't know, half these players. That's our job, is to tell their stories and explain what's going on out there, Matt. But it's a full rebuild, period. End of story.
Yeah, it is a full rebuild. You don't trade away all your all-stars if you're not going through a rebuild process. But they're doing it to get back to the highest level of competition in as quick of possible way. And you do that by bringing in high-end young talent that you're going to be able to develop. I also think sometimes people, I think the idea of this being like a 100-loss team has been connected to the idea that it's a full rebuild, and I would push back on that. I'm not saying they're going to be a 500 team or an above 500 team, but to look at this team and think that they're just going to be absolutely terrible, I would push back on that a little bit. You can go through a rebuild as they are going through and still be somewhat competitive, and I would guess that the final record this upcoming season is probably going to be very similar to what it looked like last year and not what it looked like in 2023.
So you don't think we're talking about a team that's losing 90-plus games?
No, I don't. I think that if I was put in a corner right now where I had to choose a win total for this team, it'd probably be 76, 77, 78, somewhere in there. That's kind of where I think they're at. And you know what? If a few things go right, then maybe they're still sort of in contention the way the Reds were last year around the trade deadline. I mean, that's the absolute ceiling for this thing this year. But that's okay. I think if people see a product that is somewhat competitive and also understand what's going on and the direction of the organization, and maybe they get to go watch J.J. Weatherholt play every day and you get to see some of these young pitchers emerge, I think that's enough to make at least a fair amount of the fan base somewhat content with what this year will be.
Yeah, there's one thing we can all agree on, and nobody can really argue. The Cardinals have a plan now, and they have made it very clear what their plan is. Matt, the other thing that seemingly everybody agrees on, but I think fans need to, this is the show me state, they need to see it first, is that J.J. Weatherholt is going to be a star. He's going to be a household name. Anybody who's seen him play believes that. He is, by all accounts, everywhere I look, a favorite to win National League Rookie of the Year. Let me get Matt Pauly's perspective and what the buzz is down there now about J.J. Weatherholt.
He's going to be given every opportunity to win a job, or maybe the better way to say it is he's won a job and he just has to make sure not to play himself out of it. I think right now he is penciled in as the everyday second baseman for this team. There is excitement centered around him. His hit tool, guys, and I'm not telling you anything that you don't know, his hit tool is major league ready. Does that mean there's not going to be some bumps in the road? Does that mean he's not going to face some adversity? Does that mean the league isn't going to adjust to him and he's going to have to do some adjusting back? No, that happens to everybody. But this guy has what you need to be a very high-level major league player. There's going to be some other things that come along. Like, I would suspect that the home run power looks a whole lot different for him 3-4 years down the line than it does right now. That doesn't mean that he can't hit home runs, but this is somebody who hits the ball really, really hard, and his profile should play out to the big league level right away.
I know that there were rumors out there about the possibility of Andrew McCutchen, and it seems like it doesn't. It's probably not likely that he ends up here, but there are Cardinals fans who are interested in that, and whether or not a veteran player like him on a team that's pretty young. I mean, if you look at the lineup, there isn't anybody who's hit 30 yet. The projected lineup, I mean, all these guys are 29 or younger, so it may not be the worst thing in the world to have an established veteran presence on the team who can help along some of the younger players. Obviously, there's no way to measure how helpful that is, but I think you can, you know, you can say that there is good value in that. Would McCutchen or somebody like that make sense for the Cardinals?
I don't think McCutchen would, because he doesn't play enough outfield. He is. They need a right-handed bat who can play in the outfield. He played 7 games in the outfield last season while DHing 120 games. 2024, year before, it was 5 games in the outfield, 113 games as a DH. He played 50 games in the outfield in 2022 with the Brewers. The last time he was a full-time outfielder was 2021 with the Phillies. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't fit the roster. He doesn't do. You need somebody who is a right-handed bat who can platoon and play the outfield. And unless McCutchen just still can play the outfield, and for whatever reason, the Pirates weren't playing him out there, but I don't suspect that to be the case, the puzzle pieces just don't fit with McCutchen and the Cardinals.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. As much as I love Andrew McCutchen, that does not make sense. And I'm glad that people respect him and that they threw his name out there and all that good stuff. But I don't see anything. I don't see any smoke there at all. I think Randall Grichuk would make some sense. Tommy Pham's out there. Do you want to go the Pham-inator Pham 3.0?
Would Pham agree to being a part-time player where he is going to just be very splitty? I don't know. Maybe he's at a point in his career where he would go for that, but what I know about Tommy Pham is that he's going to be somebody who wants to play every day. So I don't think that puzzle piece fits unless he is completely fine being a platoon outfielder.
I know we've had a lot of discussion, and Bernie talked about this yesterday too, Jordan Walker, and we had Brant Brown on the show during the season, and you know, reading between the lines, I think those guys were trying to reach him in a way. I think Ollie and Brown were trying to reach him in terms of his development, and you know, maybe coaching isn't sinking in the way they would like it to. Would there be some value in having a veteran presence around for somebody in particular like him? I think it helps all young players, you know, in different ways. But maybe for somebody like him, would it be more beneficial?
I think for the team, it's been like the part of the question you didn't ask. Yes, they could use a veteran bat and another veteran presence on this team. They are very, very young, and bringing the right guy in who can also perform a little bit, that's something that I think is needed. In terms of how it impacts Jordan Walker specifically, I don't know. I just I think Walker's had a really, really good spring. I think he's become more aware of the things that he needs to, and I say off spring, good off season. I think he's become more aware of the things that that he needs to do to fix, and that maybe he needs to stop being so averse to change. But I would be being disingenuous with you guys if I sat here and said having a veteran outfielder, a veteran presence in the clubhouse is going to do much to impact Jordan Walker.
Matt,
I just don't know.
Matt Pauly, any other news, nuggets that you can pass along from today's sessions?
Health is right where they want it to be right now, which is good. You know, we've spent the last 24 to 36 hours getting terrible injury news across Major League Baseball, and so far they feel very comfortable with where everybody is. I got into the clubhouse for the first time today. It looks awesome. It is so far different than what the clubhouse used to look like down here. So just as we continue to get introduced to new pieces of this of what they did to the complex, it's that much more impressive. The clubhouse looks awesome.
I can't wait. I'll be down there in a month. In the meantime, you'll be holding it down for us in Jupiter, Florida. Matt Pauly covering spring training. He'll be with us on the Gas House Gang every day at 12:05. So we appreciate it very much. Have a great rest of your day down there, buddy. We'll see you soon.
All right, thanks, guys.
Still here, still trusted. The voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Back on KMOX with Chris Ronji, I'm Tom Ackerman, talking some baseball with Matt Pauly last segment. College basketball coming at the bottom of the hour, just a few minutes away from Troy Robertson, the Billiken broadcaster. It's been a fun offseason for, I would say, a lot of people in baseball, but Cardinals fans still struggle with it, Chris, and not all of them. But again, I will say that this is a good resource for people just to every day incrementally learn a little bit more. And that's what this is about. Fact finding about what they're doing, who these players are, why they're doing what they're doing. And some of it, we're going to go really deep. I mean, it's not always about the numbers on the baseball card or even the numbers that you see on these websites. And a lot of times it is the potential that they see in turning these players around. And Chris, I believe that Heim Bloom's number one priority was to replenish pitching. I think they think they've got a few hitting prospects that they like, that they can develop right now, that could be in the big leagues within a year or two. And I'm talking about Rodriguez, Baez, Bernal, some of these others. They got a lot of catchers, though. But you know, obviously Weatherholt is up and coming. But they've got to replenish the pitching. I mean, it was poor. I mean, if you started to look around, you're like, who is going to be the next starter for this team?
Yeah.
So I do think that that was number one on his list. And holy smokes, I mean, they rocket to number two in the Baseball America Farm System rankings. It's pretty good, and that's because of pitching.
And you've got the most, or tied for the most, of the top 100 MLB pipeline prospects, which is also a testament to what they've done. And it doesn't mean they're all going to become real big league contributors, but it increases your odds that at least one of them does, or two, or maybe you're lucky, half of them do. And maybe you're really lucky and most of them do, right? So that's been the problem for them for a long time. For Cardinals fans who are, and I'm kind of where a lot of people are with this team. And my impression of Cardinals fans generally is they're disappointed where the organization is, that they've got a bit of a distance to come back from, that they're not the organization they used to be, where they were the envy of the rest of the teams in baseball, in particular, you know, the mid-market size franchises. We were the envy. Cardinals, everybody looked at the Cardinals and said, how do we do that? How do they keep winning? And I think the disappointment is that they are so far away from that, and that maybe for some people it was they wish they would have made more progress in that direction sooner. But for me, it is, and I think a lot of people agree with this, and you know, I could be wrong, and you could tell me I'm wrong, but I think people are relieved that they have finally done it, that they have finally acknowledged all of the structural issues, they have acknowledged the talent gap, they've acknowledged the fact they just didn't have a lot of minor league talent, and they have addressed all of it. And that's, maybe it could have happened a year or two ago, but it's happening now. So while I am frustrated, it took a little bit of time, I'm just happy that they are headed in the right direction.
I am also, but I also acknowledge that for decades, you have fans in this town who have become accustomed to winning and winning big and making trades to get better, not to replenish. It is getting better, but they don't see it that way. Replenishing the farm system. This is a replenishing like you've never seen before. This is actually something that it has never happened in my lifetime. And I would guess, unless you went through some of the bad years in the 70s, I don't remember a replenishing. I mean, Whitey Herzog came in and changed some things up, but they won pretty quickly.
Yeah.
This is different. I don't remember anything like this in my life. So it is going to be, I'll be right there with you. We're just going to learn together. You know that? Because I don't love it either, knowing that they're not going to be a contender, but I know what they're trying to do. And I don't know what the timeline is. It could take 2, 3, 5 years to be a World Series contender. It won't take 2.
Hope it's not 5.
But it is going to be somewhere in that window. It's not going to be one.
Because the Cardinals fans, it's not going to be one.
And it's not going to be two, probably.
No. And I think if everything goes right, three is probably the correct number.
We're not saying slip into the playoffs 3 years from now. We're saying a dangerous team, good, and could sign a couple of big dogs and make a run at it.
Cardinals fans have historically celebrated and supported this team in a very big way, and they see it in the attendance that only the Dodgers in the National League could even pull fans like they could, right? And they see that and go, if that's the kind of supporting fan base we are, we want to be rewarded with a good pennant chasing team, and the hope is that they have figured out a path toward that and that it doesn't take 5 years or longer.
Yeah, I think in 2028 you should be excited about where this team could end up going in terms of October and November. I think that's legitimate, and I think that should be the goal, and if it happens earlier than that, that'd be great. I don't even know if they're going to start the season on time next year.
Until then, we just want to see signs that it's headed that way.
Yeah. DSG says, Tony La Russa took him 10 years to win his first Cardinals World Series. Totally different, dude. I mean, I appreciate that comment, and I understand, but he made the playoffs his first year and had an absolute beast of a roster in 2000 after Mark McGwire couldn't get them to the promised land. So he had a totally different philosophy behind him in terms of ownership, general manager. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back. It is the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingandCooling.com, and Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. Well, I enjoy spending time with my pal Chris Ronji talking sports in the middle of the day, and when it's not Ronj, I am super happy to spend a few hours on college basketball game days with this guy. He is the analyst on FanDuel Sports Network. He is a former Billiken, and he is an all-around great guy. He is Troy Robertson joining us on KMOX. How are you?
Tom Ackerman, how are you, buddy? Great to hear from you.
Doing great. Good to talk to you, and good to spend some time with you always. And, wow, I mean, little did we know when we accepted that assignment to do games on TV that this team would take off and be the darlings of college basketball. You know, they get called the most exciting team in college basketball. If you watch these games, it's not far off. I don't know a team that can flip a game around as fast as they can. It's really something.
Well, I know you and I both try really hard to not just be blanket, you know, SLU fans and just play to the hometown crowd, but the numbers bear out what you just said. I mean, in the country right now, they're number one in effective field goal percentage of when they score and how they score, and number one in effective field goal defense. So they are literally number one in the country at the best at scoring the ball the way they want to score it, and the best in the country at stopping the other teams from scoring the ball. So, you know, that makes for a really exciting brand. And I think on top of that, as you well know, that they're just great guys. They play selfless, seems to be very little to no ego in the room. And, you know, as we've seen all season, you just never know who's going to explode for them and kind of create these crazy runs where they just go on, you know, 9-0, 15-0 runs and a minute like we had the other night. It's just been really, really fun to call the games and fun to cheer the team on.
And they've got an exceptional coach in Josh Schertz, so it's not a surprise this is a good team. But was there a moment or a game, or was it gradual, that you realized, okay, this isn't just a good team, but this team is legitimately good?
Yeah, it's funny. I'd go all the way back to the summer, last summer, when he just closed recruiting. They had a day at Busch Stadium with all the guys on the team, all the new guys. And there was maybe, you know, 10 of us other former players and alumni invited. And he said, I'm just telling you, this is going to be really great. I think this team could win 30 games. And, you know, and when you're done recruiting, I was sitting there thinking, yeah, sure, coach, I'm sure we will. You know, I get it that he was, you know, he felt like he hit on all of his recruits. But to be that positive and confident about it in July of last year, and then just to see, I mean, I think, I don't know if there's a moment that stands out, but I just think they play basketball the right way, the way they share the ball, the way they all shoot it. I mean, he has a formula of what he wants done and teaches it to that formula. And these guys fit his math, if you will, perfectly, and they're able to execute it. So I don't know if I had a moment, but pretty soon right away, like within the first 7 or 8 games, when you're going, wait a minute, we're getting to 100 every game. And a few of those games was, we didn't shoot the ball particularly well. And he thought, well, I guess 90, 95, 100 is going to be our new norm. And sure enough, that's carried through the whole year.
For me, it was the quote-unquote secret scrimmage against Iowa. When I saw them do what they did to Iowa, and it wasn't just that, but they looked like they not only belonged on the floor with Iowa, but they could match up toe-to-toe with them. And it got me thinking, if they make the NCAA tournament, it could be the same scenario where a team doesn't have much time to plan for them, and then they just run them. I mean, I'm sitting here already just sort of blocking off April 4th through the 6th because what if? I mean, Loyola did it. Wichita State did it. I mean, I could go right down the line. I mean, they just have to get in, Troy, and then you just never know.
Well, and I think at this point, you know, I mean, unless they really fall off a cliff or had some kind of extenuating circumstance, I mean, I think they're in. Everything you read and see now, the numbers are in their favor with the net ranking of 15. I think they're in the mid-20s in KenPom. You know, I don't think there's a question anymore. They're in. I think now it's about the matchups. You know, who will they face? Where will they face them? But you're right. I mean, they are incredibly hard to prepare for, having 7 guys that average 10 or more. I mean, you know, normally in sports you say, okay, we have to take away this guy or that guy and make things hard on them. You know, who do you do that with? I guess you always start with Robbie, but any of the other guys can absolutely burn you. And I think, you know, if they shoot the ball, if they stay healthy and get favorable matchups, which to me is, you know, against a team without a real big lineup, you know, I think it definitely feels like a Sweet 16 type of team. And then from there, you just never know.
So you're talking about them being in, and that's the question I was going to go to here with the net where it is, and they're 24th in the KenPom, 18 in the AP. So this is a team that is getting recognition with the models and with just voters who know they are a good team. But as they go down the stretch here in the final month, about what cannot happen? You know, I think we've been talking, at least going back to the beginning of the season because of the non-conference, that they have to win their tournament probably to get in. I don't know that that's the case anymore. I think you're probably right. I think they're in. But what do they absolutely have to avoid here?
Well, you can't have a sustained losing streak. And obviously, you even hate to even put this out in the universe, but you just don't want any significant injuries that really change the flow and the way that they play. I mean, they have 7 conference games remaining. They will be favored in all 7 of those games. 3 of them, I believe, are at home. And then you've got, you know, 2 with Loyola, who's at the bottom of the conference. I mean, so it's hard to fathom any scenario where if they're not undefeated in the regular season, they're very close. They have a game at Rhode Island that could be a little scary. And, of course, same goes for Dayton and George Mason, all 3 tough home road games. But they'll be favored in all those games. And so as long as, you know, they just don't take some kind of big 180 with the way they're playing, they're going to finish with, if not undefeated, you know, 1 or 2 losses max. And then that gets them a double bye in the A-10 tournament, where essentially they're moving in and playing Friday. You know, you just have to win 2 games. I think that's right. It could be 3. But, you know, they have earned all the public praise that they've gotten and all their numbers. They're just playing the right way and playing the way Coach Schertz has designed it from the beginning. And it's really fun to, you know, see the city get behind them. And I loved what he said about, you know, we're not a feel-good story. They're a really, really good basketball team that not just has been winning, but really crushing people with a 23 points per game margin of victory on the season. I mean, that speaks volumes.
It is amazing because they play with fire sometimes. You know, they get off to slow starts. They're only up 6 on LaSalle in the second half, and then boom. I mean, they win the game by 24. It's just crazy. But that you better be careful going on the road to some of these teams and playing with fire like that. You could get burned, but But so far, so good. And then the other thing, Troy, is the obvious thing hanging out there, which will increase in volume as we get closer to the end of the season, is Josh Schertz going to get courted by another institution? And I think he will not let that be a distraction to the team because, quite honestly, I don't think he knows. I mean, he just wants to coach this team right here, right now.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I saw he had some statements on that recently, just about how he came here because he thought this could be a great job with high profile facilities and a great public support. And that's exactly what's happened. That hasn't changed. The other part is all the best parts of the story are yet to be written. Yes, they're playing great. Yes, they've done unbelievable to get where they are. But as we all know in college basketball, February and March is where it gets really fun. So, and anywhere that he could potentially be courted by, that script hasn't been written either. You know, what jobs will come open, what's attractive to him versus not, you know, what ADs target him versus not. I mean, there's just still way too much basketball to get into all that other than to say, is he someone of a very high caliber who would, you know, be attractive a lot of places and has certainly, you know, made his mark here in St. Louis in just 2 years.
And here is also a very down the road question, even maybe way beyond what happens with Coach Schertz is, and you know, we talk about the senator here in Missouri, Schmidt, who says he wrote a letter to the Big East that SLU should be admitted into the conference. Would this be a good fit? Would the SLU basketball program be a good fit in the Big East?
Absolutely. It makes TV sense from our, you know, the number of viewers that you would get. It makes geographic sense from, you know, having other Midwest type teams. Obviously the Jesuit part of it all is a good fit. It's a basketball only conference, not football. And the biggest thing that you have to continue to do, and Coach Schertz has talked about this, is, you know, not just make an appearance, but arrive. You know, 1 year is not going to be enough. But if you can blink, and whether he stays, hopefully he does stay, of course, or someone else, where SLU becomes so consistent, where they're always in the top two or three of the conference, and it becomes, you know, one of those things where the Big East can't say no, and that's really the goal. And I think if he stays, and I know there's going to be a ton of momentum to keep him and a ton of resources, you know, given to him, that's one of those things you could blink and you're just the, you know, kind of the Gonzaga of the Midwest where you're in the tournament every year. Because honestly, you guys, that the A-10 is it's tough math. I mean, you really have to be first or second in the regular season, and you probably have to get to the semifinals, if not win the tournament, just for those numbers to work so you can get in. And that's hard for any coach, whereas in the Big East, you know, there's usually 3 to 5 teams that go, and so you have a little bit more give in your schedule.
Great points by Troy Robertson. Boy, this is fun. It's a lot of fun to be the talk of the town, and that's exactly what St. Louis University basketball is. Next game for them, Friday night at Loyola, and we'll have the game on KMOX. Bob Ramsey and Earl Austin Jr. will have it for you. 7:30 tip, 7:15 pregame. Troy Robertson, always a pleasure. Appreciate working with you on the TV side. Tamar Scher, we should mention as well, does a wonderful job on the sidelines for us. And we have a great crew of Brian Shapiro and Nick Thompson and everybody else working in that control room. Appreciate you, Troy. Thank you.
All right, brother. I'll see you soon. 7th, I think, is our next game. Can't wait.
That's right. We will have a good time. That is Troy Robertson. I'm Tom Ackerman, along with Chris Ranji. Matt Pajeski's our producer.
Now, back to the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling.
And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis and Chesterfield Fence and Deck.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Well, 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 look who has scored the game-winning goal. And 2 points as Slovakia beats Finland to open play at the Winter Olympics. 20-year-old Dalibor Dvorsky.
Come on now.
Of the St. Louis Blues with an Olympic debut that he'll be talking about for the rest of his life. What a great performance by Dvorsky as Slovakia just beat Finland to get things going. Team USA looks ferocious. They're going to wreak havoc with Matthew Tkachuk and Brady Tkachuk, among others, slamming their bodies into the opponent and throwing them into the boards. That's what they do, man. They get physical. They talk a big game. They score. It's awesome. And then you got Canada, which I sense the Canadian fans, who I think, like Cardinals fans, analyze every little thing about the sport and about their team. I think they're a little nervous about Benner. Bennington's had a tough year. Yeah.
Yeah. Should we be nervous about Latvia?
I don't think so.
No,
I don't think so. But okay. I think anybody that's reached this level has to be taken seriously. But back to Bennington, something tells me he'll show up for this and he'll be great. And he was great the Four Nations faceoff, and he'll be great this time around. I wouldn't worry about Jordan Bennington.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about.
But
him.
It is going to be
he's
fun.
He's never worried.
No, he's like, what do I look nervous?
How do you? Don't you think after you win a cup that quickly in your career? Don't you think that everything else after is just kind of like, how can I get worried about this?
Right. I think you know that you can rise to the competition when the time comes. Not that he's not doing that now in the NHL season, but he's gone through some tough times. Things aren't going his way. But I don't know. Something tells me he's going to be great when Canada needs him most. So it should be a lot of fun. I look forward to that, the hockey competition. I've enjoyed the Winter Olympics. I haven't watched every single event. I kind of come and go like I think most fans do, but I love the fact that it's on all the time. I've always enjoyed the Winter Olympics. There's a beauty to it. You know, you watch these things you don't get to see every day. Summer games, they're the best of the best, but they're things a lot of times that we play and do here in the United States. I just, the unique, I mean, I'm watching right now, this guy's in a half pipe on a snowboard over your shoulder doing flips all over the place. It's just unbelievable.
You know, and now you've got these off the, for lack of a better term, off the field storylines. Well, first of all, you got Lindsey Vonn who crashed, okay?
Yes.
And so that got a lot of attention because she was trying to make a comeback, and that was a brutal thing to happen. And then you got this dude who admits to cheating on his girlfriend immediately after winning a medal. And his first thought is, you know what? I'd love to celebrate this, but I'm too sad because I cheated on my girlfriend and she won't talk to me.
I mean, it wouldn't be the Olympics without drama.
It's
you know?
Just amazing.
And there's just so much of a human side to it. And I think that's what people are attracted to, is not just the competition, but the human beings that are putting themselves through this incredible pressure where they've trained their entire lives. And then one little slip up can change everything. But then there's the other side of the off field things that are going through their head. And, you know, of course, you're going to have the political statements, both, you know, people who are for and against. That comes with the territory when it's the Olympics and people from around the world. You can't avoid it, I guess. But I've enjoyed these games so far, and we're early. I mean, it doesn't wrap up until February 22nd, so there's still a lot to come. And as I mentioned, hockey's just getting rolling.
When the Olympics happen every year, every time it did happen, this is how it felt to me. They'd start, they'd be around for 2 weeks, and that's a long time for the games to be happening. And there was almost this comfort of you come home, and depending on, you know, what time of day they're occurring, it's like a blanket, a nice warm blanket. You put it on the Olympics or on TV. And then when the closing ceremony comes around, it just was always, it's kind of a bummer. It was like going on a good vacation and you're gone for a week and it's time to come back almost. And you get sad when you leave the place because you've got used to the hotel room. You know what I mean?
I hear that. I hear that loud and clear.
I'm going to miss this place.
I did not get as into the Paris games as I thought I would, but I did, again, sort of come and go and enjoy it. I think I'm going to be into LA. I think I'm going to be into 28. But it, you know, a lot
we
of times
the
when,
Cup
these,
coming up
when these games are overseas like this, the time change and all that, this one's not too bad. I mean, I'm looking at live coverage right now, but having it happen on our soil, and especially having soccer here in St. Louis, 28 is going to be awesome.
Hey, let me just make this suggestion.
It's also the year the Cardinals will be chasing playoff spots in World Series.
Let me just say this. If you do make it to that podium, you win a medal, there's no need to announce your infidelity. Just keep that to yourself.
They'll use the platform for just about anything, Raj. This is the Gas House Gang. People like to use our platform, and we appreciate them very much. It's been a lot of fun to do the show. For Matt Pajeski, for Chris Ranji, I'm Tom Ackerman. Have a great Wednesday.